We want to give a warning that this episode does contain graphic material that may not be suitable for some listeners. Hey y'all, I'm your host Gabrielle.
And I'm Alan.
Welcome to The Eerie Touch, where every week we dive into all things murder, mystery, and paranormal. Suicide alone is what we deem as awful, sad, and traumatizing. We've spent years trying to understand the human brain as to what would cause someone to take that life-ending leap. Something that we probably will never fully understand unless we felt the same way that those individuals have. But public suicide, well, that's a whole other level beyond suicide. Public suicide tends to get glorified in some way. I think in a sense, though, it's not that we are the ones trying to glorify it, but rather morbidly curious. Especially when it comes to people whose outer appearance looks as if they have it all. When a beautiful, strong, and confident 29-year-old woman from Ohio moves to Florida, it seemed her dreams were beginning to come true. A journalist who differentiated herself from the norm. Someone who wanted to change the world, help people, and really make a difference. The facade she had, though, would only last so long. In July of 1974, she did just that. She changed the world by taking her own life on live television with thousands of people watching. The first ever televised live suicide. This is the story of Christine Chebbuck. Christine was born on August 24th of 1944 in Hudson, Ohio to George and Peg Chebbuck. George was a very successful luxury automotive and manufacturing industry salesperson, while Peg was an old-fashioned housewife. Christine was the only daughter the pair had, having an older brother Tim and a younger brother Greg. Being the only girl, it's safe to say that she was spoiled and absolutely adored. And Christine was funny, caring, sweet, smart, and had quick wits about her. She attended the Laurel School for Girls in Shaker Heights, which is in the suburbs of Cleveland. It's one of the nicer places to live around there, and the schools in the area are actually like highly rated. But even at a young age, Christine was different from other girls. She wasn't much of the glam and glitter type. She wanted to explore. She wanted to have a purpose in life. She never felt like she fully fit in because of that. She even jokingly formed a dateless wonder club for girls who didn't have dates on the weekends. Girls who appeared to be outcasts when it came to popularity.
And no matter how much money you have, there's always that popular group. I don't know if that's humbling or egocentric.
My opinion? A little of both. It's around this time that Christine starts to put on a facade of not caring, but in all reality, she did. If you've ever felt like an outcast, then you know that that can hurt.
And you can be told to just not care, but in reality, what happens is you keep telling yourself not to care until you actually do. You're basically conditioning yourself to sweep it under the rug. Honestly, when you think about it, that doesn't seem very healthy.
I'd say it's not, but to an extent, it doesn't affect some people the way it did her. In middle school, Christine began having a love for instruments. Naturally, her parents were always supportive of her, so Peg and George bought her a flute, and she became a natural. Moving to high school, she was a flutist in the band. Her skills separated her beautifully from the others. However, just as quick as her interest came, it left. So after she began pursuing acting, she enrolled in the University of North Carolina's summer acting program, which was more of an upscale or private thing. Christine was 16 at the time, and because this was a summer program, there were other fun opportunities around to help with the downtime in the hot North Carolina heat. After coming across friends talking about what they were going to be into, Christine joins in on some fun and begins kayaking. She meets 23-year-old Dave through all of that, and their friendship actually flourishes. Finally, Christine felt wanted from someone other than just family. She was at last experiencing what she had yearned for years ago, her first love. Dave was a good guy and treated Christine respectfully. They had a lot in common from interests to hobbies, and it felt like he truly understood her. Sadly, it wouldn't last, though. Time goes on, and all of a sudden, she gets told news that honestly, according to her brother, George, that changed Christine forever. Dave was in a car accident that he didn't survive. He was driving with a friend when he crashed, and that passenger did survive, but he wouldn't be the same either. He was left paralyzed and had to undergo over a year of rehab, and Christine was there for the entirety of it.
And that had to be hard on her. I mean, losing your first love so tragically, especially being so young.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she seems like she's very caring, you know, to have helped his friend through all this. I just can't imagine.
Mm-hmm. That's how she responded to losing her first love, to try to help his friend. She had always been an empathetic person. She never looked at things the way that everyone else did. She was a heartwarming person who wanted to make everyone happy. Christine could always pick up on others' feelings, and that's what ultimately drove her to the career path that she ends up on. She majors in theater arts at Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. After attending Endicott College in Beverly, Massachusetts, Christine earns a degree in broadcasting at Boston University in 1965.
She was all over the place, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like she was more career-driven at this point, though.
She overall was. Christine was very good at hiding her feelings and thought it best to just focus on her career and hoping that the rest would eventually follow, and for a minute, it actually did. Upon graduating from Boston, she lands a gig in Cleveland at WVIZ from 1966 to 67. The summer of 67, she attended a summer workshop in radio and television at New York University. Now, while she's working that same year in Canton, Ohio, she meets her second love. According to an interview with her brother Greg in the Sun.UK, she had a romance with a man that she worked in television with.
And was it serious?
Well, considering that she moved to Pittsburgh to be with him, I would say yes.
Sounds like it.
She lived in Pittsburgh for a while, and she worked at WQED-TV as an assistant producer for two local shows, Women's World and Keys to the City. After 3 months, Christine's heart broke again when her relationship fell apart. Her father, George, wasn't too fond of her second love. He was a bit older than her, and the fact that he was Jewish didn't help much either. There was too much strain, and it became just another stab as she grows older, having her starting to believe that maybe true love just wasn't in her cards. Heartbroken, but seemingly headstrong, she sets it aside, and in 1968, she left to spend 4 years as a hospital computer operator and 2 years with a cable TV firm in Florida. She moved into the family summer home in Siesta Keys, and after her parents divorced, her mother and brother Greg moved in with her. The divorce was as expected. It was hard on Christine, considering how the family was so close-knit. Peg and Greg always tried to be there for her, and Christine has even been stated in the past claiming that the both of them were her closest and best friends.
And divorce is always hard, but I think at this point, it's important to note the trail of heartbreak she's been on.
Yeah.
She didn't make friends easy, it sounded like, let alone boyfriends.
Mm-hmm.
The love of her life has passed, the second love interest, that's ended. And now her parents have separated. It's a lot for someone to handle.
Yeah, it is. And you know, Christine at this point is only 24. And things just keep getting magnified for her. Everywhere she turns, her friends are either getting married or having children. And she feels left out. She feels alone, abandoned, and left wondering, you know, like, what's wrong with her?
And it's natural for us as human beings to want companionship. You know, not everyone wants children, but most eventually want a best friend at least to spend their lives with. It goes back to the old saying, no one wants to die alone. Let it be known, though, sometimes it takes longer for others. I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to end up alone. I mean, look at me, it took me 40 years to find my best friend. You.
Aw, baby. You're too sweet.
Give you diabetes.
Oh, I get what you're saying, though. I'm a firm believer that there's someone out there for everyone, and for those of us that feel as if it's never going to happen, I want you to think of this. Sometimes you have life lessons to learn first. Sometimes you have to go through hardships to make you truly appreciate what lies ahead. Those people that you see that seem so happy sometimes really aren't as gleeful as you think.
And the grass isn't always greener on the other side. I mean, life's a ride, and sometimes you just have to wait your turn.
That was a good one. However, sometimes that's harder done than said. Christine was fighting battles that a lot outside of her family didn't really know about. It was more than just her love life that got her down. She was always the odd man out. She was determined, confident, and really intelligent, though she felt as if she couldn't get close to others. She could also come across as a little awkward. She had a dry sense of humor that she grew throughout her years of unhappiness, and people just didn't really know how to take that. One thing that seemed to calm her down, though, was visiting children in the hospital. You see, she would create her own puppets and would put on puppet shows for the children. Their laughter always put her at ease and made her heart happy again to see the glee in those babies' faces. Her family was always supportive of her. And in fact, for years at this point, Christine's parents have shoveled out thousands of dollars for her to see therapists and psychiatrists in the hopes of helping her and having her feel better.
Did it help?
For a bit, but obviously not as much as they'd hoped, because in 1970, Christine overdoses, but she doesn't succeed in that suicide attempt. She was rushed to the hospital, revived, nursed back to health, and later that year, she picked herself back up and achieved a position at the ABC affiliate channel WXLT-TV, which is now known as WWSB. The owner, Bob Nelson, had originally hired Christine as a reporter, but within time gave her a community affairs talk show called the Suncoast Digest, and it usually aired at 9 a.m. The show was to be about the community and local business owners and things that are relative to the area.
And she wasn't happy with that, though, was she?
Yeah. At first, yes, but that's only because she was hoping that within time she could prove herself to Nelson and eventually be able to dive into what she deemed as more prominent work.
Yeah.
I mentioned before that she wanted to help people, that she wanted to make a difference, and that is what she intended to do. You know, Christine, usually she always set goals for herself, and you know, she was always determined to achieve those goals. But here, you know, the pay sucked and the work was hard. It was a one-woman show, and she was left to carry the brunt end of it. Her mother, Peg, though, did everything she could to have her baby girl feel comfortable and prosper. She went so far as to buy Christine $2,000 designer dresses in the hopes that it would help her stand out, you know, and look well presented.
Yeah, and I'm sure in the 70s there weren't a lot of reporters wearing those fancy designer dresses that cost that much.
Yeah, according to Greg, there wasn't. Christine was there for over 3 years and still hadn't made the steps she was hoping to make. Her goals were slowly feeling as if they were unattainable. She was more than discouraged, she was upset, like mad upset at the higher-ups of the station. You see, as the 70s rolled on, the media was growing. WXLT was beginning to take notes of bigger stations who were drawing in more viewers. And one thing was consistent with all of them. They aired those horror stories that usually people shied away from. Viewers were now becoming morbidly curious of, you know, just traumatizing, horrifying scenarios.
I'm guessing you're talking about, like, car wrecks, shootings, fires, deaths, and suicides?
Exactly, to a T. WXLT was soon to jump on that bandwagon, telling Christine and the other reporters of what they were soon to report on. Their boss told them, and I quote, "If it bleeds, it leads." Christine was absolutely shaken. She was no step closer to her goals, and if anything, she had just taken 100 steps backwards from where she was. She tried to lean them towards a different direction, but what's the whole point or goal, really, of the media?
To tell leading stories. Whoever has the most viewers, makes the most money, gets the most advertisement.
Bingo. And because of that, her bosses wouldn't even hear her out. They were quick to shut that door, leaving Christine feeling hopeless. However, she wasn't a quitter, and she tried to play the hand that she was given. She did numerous stories to fulfill her company's wishes, but they were never good enough. They wanted gore. They wanted tear-jerking stories Christine just couldn't keep up. She looked at it as, you know, sad and horrific, and she didn't like the fact that the media was trying to glorify all of this. It took such a toll on her that in 73, she started getting stomach aches in her lower belly. She just chopped it up to nerves, being stressed and depressed, but eventually it got so bad that she couldn't hide it anymore. She makes an appointment with her OBGYN. Within that appointment, she's told that she'll have to have her right ovary removed. And to make the situation even worse, the doctor tells her that if she's wanting to have kids in this lifetime, that she'll need to do so within the next 2 or 3 years.
As in, she can't have kids after that?
The doctor doesn't say that indefinitely, but what they do say is that it will be extremely difficult. So now, there's just more fuel that's being added to Christine's fire. She's 29 at this point. She has no love life, a virgin, no friends outside of her family, at least not a lot that she was close to. Her career is plummeting in her eyes, and now she's being told that she has only 2 or 3 years to find that dream guy, have kids, or that dream is just gone forever. It's overwhelming, disheartening, and she feels like she's at the bottom of the barrel.
Let's back up a second. She's 29 and she's a virgin?
She was, but, you know, she was waiting on her soulmate. She was waiting on the right person, and there's nothing wrong with wanting to wait till marriage.
No, there's not. It's just weird to hear, you know, in this day and age. Not a lot of people now have those kind of morals, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I agree, but I really don't want to dwell too much on that because I don't want y'all to think too much into it and focus on that one thing, and when in reality, that was just a small piece of the whole thing. Well, Christine, once again, left depressed, does what?
Goes back to work.
Yep. She goes on to work and continues her duties. She ends up doing a piece on suicide where she's interviewing a police officer. Within the segment, she asks him what is the most successful way to achieve suicide and where exactly you would do it. She's told that suicide by gunshot to the head is usually always triumphant. And it's actually not too long after that interview that Christine goes out and purchases a .38 caliber revolver. She ends up telling the night editor, Rob Smith, about her latest purchase, and he asks, why in the world would you need one of those? And Christine, being Christine, replies with, well, Rob, I had this really nifty idea. I thought I'd bring it to work and blow myself away during my talk show. Now, Rob left completely speechless, thinking that, you know, this is just Christine's sick humor. Thinks nothing of it and changes the subject to conversation. After all, she joked about killing herself all of the time. She had a dry sense of humor, and her coworkers just chopped it up to that.
Yeah, I guess I would have too. I mean, how many times have we all said, oh my God, I'm going to kill myself?
You know? Yeah. My go-to is always, like, kill me now. Just kill me now.
I mean, but we never really mean it. It's just a figure of speech, I guess.
Normally, yeah. But I'd hope at this point of the story you realize that Christine isn't like us. She's not seemingly normal. She doesn't think like we do, nor does she feel how, you know, I guess we do. There's a lot of contributing factors that have led up to what I'm about to tell you, and I think that hopefully you've been able to pick up on that. On July 15th of 1974, Christine shows up to work unusually happy-go-lucky. She confuses her coworkers, explaining that she had to read the newscast to open her show, which was something that she had never done before, but it's her show, and who are they to question her? Within the first 10 minutes of Suncoast Digest, she covers 3 national news stories. The last is about a shooting at a local restaurant that happened the previous day. But when her coworkers go to show the reel of the restaurant that it happened at, the reel jams. Christine, as calm as a cucumber and determined, says, and I quote, in keeping with Channel 40's policy of bringing you the latest in blood and guts and in living color, you're going to see another first, an attempted suicide. She pulls out her .38 caliber revolver that she hid in a bag underneath her newscasting desk. She sticks it behind her right ear and pulls the trigger. Her body immediately hits the desk and slumps over.
And all this was on live television?
Every bit of it. Actually, the cameraman did an interview with E! News and talked about how he didn't even cut the camera at first because he thought she was joking. He said that he peeked his head over the camera before finally shutting it off, and as he's walking over to Christine's body, he's claiming, if this is some kind of sick joke, it's an awful one and no one's laughing, Christine. It wasn't until he got next to her that he saw the blood in her body twitching when he realized what he had actually just witnessed.
So she wasn't dead yet?
No, not yet. She wasn't. She was sent to the local hospital where she eventually succumbed to her injuries 15 hours later, but she never woke up or anything after she shot herself.
I would guess that she was probably brain dead.
Yeah.
It's not always instant death, you know, when you shoot yourself in the head, especially with the way they described that she shot herself behind the ear.
Yeah.
It's more toward the back of the brain. I've seen it several times in my career. You don't always die instantly. Some do, some don't. I mean, it's not always instant.
Yeah.
So did she leave a suicide note?
She didn't, but once her coworkers came to her aid, they noticed that the script that she had wrote, which is now covered in blood, had an extra paragraph near the bottom. She had written out her own report for her death for the channel to read the next day. Her suicide had everyone in a frenzy.
I'm sure.
Viewers were calling the station left and right, wanting to know what kind of sick joke this was. And then other callers were honestly worried for Christine, and they were just trying to call in and on what they had just witnessed. Local police stations were getting hundreds of thousands of calls about it. The whole thing was just troubling for everyone. Her brother Greg has stated that he believes that she had been planning this for at least 2 weeks. She had given his fiancé at the time an heirloom piece of jewelry, to which they thought was just a kind gesture at the time. He now believes she was getting rid of things that were no longer important to her for her family or friends to remember her by.
Mm-hmm.
He also believes she specifically chose that day because of their grandparents. The grandparents lived across the road from Christine, and she was very close to them. They watched her segment every single day and never missed it. But on this particular day, her grandpa had a doctor's appointment that he didn't feel like driving to, so her grandma drove him. They wouldn't be home to watch the show, and Greg says that it was the only time they had ever missed her show. He goes on to talk about how him and their brother Tim always kind of knew that she would end her life. When he was 8 and Tim was 12, Tim had told Greg, and I quote, "We have to hug Chrissy extra hard because we aren't going to have her very long."
Wow.
I know. I think that's crazy. I mean, you know, just to think of how young they were, 8 and 12, and they already had a feeling. He now believes, though, that she wasn't depressed, but rather bipolar. You see, in 1974, that wasn't a recognized medical condition. And the medication that she was taking for depression would have just made her bipolar disorder worse.
Yeah, and I can see, given what you've said today, usually those that suffer from bipolar disorder, they put their all into something, and then they just suddenly stop and move on to something else. It's a never-ending cycle without the proper treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Even at a young age, I mean, she went from playing the flute to acting to theater to broadcasting. She had high highs and low lows. I can't imagine being in her position and feeling just so hopeless and you know, just distraught. That's my only way out would be suicide.
Yeah. I think that's why Christine, why she's just stuck with me since I found out about her. You know, I'm around the same age as she was, and at one point, you know, I felt as if I wanted to, my life was going nowhere, and I, you know, thought about killing myself. But I mean, I brought myself out of it. I feel like everyone, or most everyone, you know, goes through hardships in their lives, and I'm sure that a lot of you at some point have considered killing yourself, whether it was just a thought for a second, or you really thought about it.
Yeah, I mean, you get just down in the dumps to where nothing's going right. Yeah.
Yeah. Normally, you know, more people are able to bring themselves out of it.
No, friends help.
Yes. You know, like, I found you. I have a good job now. And like you said earlier, I feel like I had to go through what I did to get to where I'm at now. And it really breaks my heart, and I'm not trying to be traumatic here or anything, but it really does, to even begin to fathom the pain that she felt. Anyways, it seems Christine did change the world in some way. She was the first suicide to have ever been broadcasted over live television. And because of her utmost gruesome tragedy, it wasn't just news stations that have tried to cover it. WXLT did record each show, and the footage of her death has been heavily sought after. Apparently, before Christine was even deceased, though, Greg was quick to get an attorney to make sure it would never be released to anyone, which I completely understand. Mm-hmm. He took out an injunction preventing repeat of the channel footage, but that hasn't stopped producers from trying to cash out on Christine's misery. In 2016, a Sundance Festival film titled Christine was released.
And after all the facts that, I mean, I've heard here today, that movie has very little truth to it at all. We watched the movie Christine earlier in the week, and at first I thought, well, it's a pretty good show. But now you just realize that most of it was false.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say I wouldn't recommend watching it, but they're really stretching it.
Yeah.
They portray her relationship with her mother that was just completely awful, that she was some kind of hippie stoner that just mooched off her daughter. You don't hear anything about the father or the brother. You don't even know she has a brother.
Yeah.
They just play her off as some kind of virgin spinster that does, and that just doesn't sit right with me. I mean, they don't even mention the fact that she had a relationship before.
Yeah. Like, they don't. Christine's relationship with her mother and her brothers, you know, like I said earlier, she was very close to them. Her mom and her brother Greg were her best friends. And if I was her family, if I was Greg, because Greg is still living, if I was Greg, you know, I would be upset that an entire movie was made about my sister and it's all pretty much, you know, pardon my French, bullshit.
They took a lot of liberty with it.
Yes, because this is what you have to remember. There are people out there who will not do the amount of research or who don't look things up like some of us do. So there are people out there who's going to watch that movie. They're going to hear say that, oh yeah, that really happened. And so they're going to believe that. And what's sad is that her brother Greg tried for years to keep this from happening because he knew that they didn't care about who Christine really was.
No, they just want to make a profit off of it.
Mm-hmm. They wanted to profit off of her name.
Yeah.
And they did exactly what she fought WXLT on, glorifying tragedies. I wouldn't even have an issue with the movie if it was factual, but the only thing they got right was the wee bit of her journalism career, and that's it. When you Google her name, you can find countless requests of trying to receive just a snippet of her suicide. There's a couple claiming to be the real deal, but they've all been debunked. And I can only hope that she can get at least that little bit of respect. Christine Chubbuck was so much more than how she's portrayed today. She was a bright, kind-hearted woman with so much to offer the world. A woman who had the want and determination to do so many things for it. And yet, even after death, that same world is still chewing her up. Again, I'm your host, Gabrielle.
And I'm Alan.
We'll talk next week. If you're in a crisis or you're contemplating suicide, there is help available. You can call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. You can check out our reference photos and source materials for each episode on our website, theerietouch.com. Be sure to follow us on Instagram or Facebook for new leads and updates. We're basically on every platform, including YouTube, and if you could, we would really appreciate it if you left us a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcast at. It would really help us out.